You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Explorers Podcast. Today we start a new series, this one on a man that most people have not heard of, but who is a rather remarkable person. Our subject is Pierre Savignan de Brazza, a man who would explore Central Africa in the latter decades of the 20th century and be hailed as France's greatest explorer. Brazza would not only be known for his explorations, but for his humane and thoughtful approach to dealing with the African peoples that he encountered. It is a stark contrast to some of his contemporaries, such as Henry Morton Stanley, who essentially shot his way across Africa. Brazza's approach would bring him scorn from some quarters and outright disdain and hatred from certain government officials and business elements. It has also brought him a long-standing devotion from many people in Central Africa. But before we get going today, some notes for you. First thing, as always, you can refer to the show notes and website, explorerspodcast.com, for maps and photos and resources on the series. Second thing, we are dealing with the French language in this series, so my apologies for the bad pronunciations, and there will be a lot of them. And related to that, the pronunciations of the many names of people and places that we will encounter is often different depending on the source. One book might use the French name, in another it might be an English translation, and in yet another you'll find an African name. No matter, I will try and stick with one pronunciation and spelling throughout the series. Now, that said, I know I'll have some inconsistencies with regard to the star of our series, and that is because Brazza is Italian by birth, meaning it's pronounced more like Brazza, and I'll try to say that when referring to his family. However, Brazza would later become a French citizen, and the pronunciation I found tends to be Brazza, which is what I will use when talking about our star. Not a huge deal, but I just wanted to point it out. Third thing, and this is not related to this series, I want to let everyone know that I have launched a Patreon program for the podcast. If you like the show, want to continue getting 3 to 4 episodes a month, and can offer some support, that would be outstanding. The Explorers Podcast is an independently produced program. I make a little bit of money from the ads, but that mostly just covers expenses, so your support would be appreciated. And please note, you get stuff for joining. There's ad-free episodes, extra bonus mini-episodes, and even Explorers merchandise, so check it out. Again, there is a link in the show notes, or you can go to explorerspodcast.com, and you will find a link to the Patreon website on our homepage. Now, on to the show. Let us start by laying out what we are going to talk about today. First thing I will do is take a very high-level look at the situation in West Central Africa, where our story takes place. This includes what today is Gabon, the Republic of the Congo, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. This will be important so we can put into context Brazza's explorations and, later, humanitarian efforts. This situation will include a look at the institution of slavery in these regions. Second, we will do some background on Brazza, from his childhood in Italy and his move to France as a teen and subsequent life in the French Navy, including a stint chasing down slave ships off the coast of Africa. And finally, we will set the stage for Brazza's first expedition to Africa in 1875. And with that, let us head to Africa and do a brief rundown on the region circa 1850 to 1875. Here we go. So when we talk about Africa for this series, we are mostly referring to Sub-Sahara Africa, or Central Africa is not a bad description either. And what I'm talking about is mostly going to be focused on West Central Africa. By the mid-1800s, much of this middle area of Africa was a great big blank on the maps of the world. While some men had ventured into these regions, most had not come out. For quite a while, there was a big push to find the sources of the great rivers, such as the Nile, the Niger, and the Congo. Map those rivers, and you have a basic roadmap into the interior of the continent. But something changed around this time, something that would usher in an upheaval on the entire continent, and this surrounds the institution of slavery. In the mid-1800s, the biggest industry in Africa was the slave trade. For centuries, nations throughout the world had relied on African slave labor to power their economies and armies and lifestyles. But that was changing. Slavery was abolished in many nations, and the defeat of the Confederacy in 1865 signaled the end of slavery in the United States, a huge development. Now, some people equate the ending of slavery in America as the end of slavery throughout the world, but that just isn't true. Slavery has hung around for a very long time, often in different ways. In reality, slavery within Africa continued to thrive, and the practice only grew when external markets, such as the United States, dried up. Slavery in Africa was found on many, many levels. It was small and large. A tribe, or even a person, might own a few slaves, or they might have dozens or hundreds working as laborers, farmhands, sex workers, and even soldiers. This becomes even more common as plantation-like entities form and you have an increased need for cheap labor. Now, I want to pivot from the slavery issue for a moment and talk about the state of Africa as it pertains to the rest of the world, and especially Europe. Well, as we noted, the interior of Africa was a big blank to much of the world, and it had been that way for centuries. Many European countries wanted to exploit these regions, but there were so many factors that made it impractical. Thus, they stuck to the coasts, setting up outposts to trade with the native people for the goods they desired. But come 1850-1860, that changed in several ways. First, the interior of the continent was being revealed by such men as Richard Francis Burton, John Hanning Speke, Henry Morton Stanley, and Dr. David Livingston. Speke would find the source of the Nile in 1858, and Stanley crossed Africa in the 1870s, mapping the Great Congo River in the process. Africa's mysterious interior was slowly opening up. And at the same time, an industrial Europe was emerging as a powerful economic force in the world. And that meant an increased demand for more and more raw materials. And that is something that Africa possessed. This included cotton, rubber, diamonds, copper, ivory, and much, much more. Africa offered an inexpensive source for all of this stuff. And that means that the powers of Europe would begin what was called the Scramble for Africa, or the Great Game. In 1870, European powers controlled 10% of Africa. By 1910, that would flip, with 90% of the continent being ruled by Europe, the exceptions being a few independent nations such as Liberia and Ethiopia. And this is critical to our story, as much of what happens with Brazza is related to the scramble by European powers to gain mastery over a vast colonial empire. And this takes us back to the issue of slavery. As I said, Europe had abolished slavery, at least in their own countries. Many would let it continue in their colonies, often illegally. But within Africa, slavery thrived. I want to give you a couple of examples of how long and how deep slavery persisted in some parts of the continent. Example 1. In 1896, France conquered Madagascar. In doing so, they freed 500,000 slaves. Example number 2. Ethiopia would allow slavery until 1932. So the continuing practice of slavery in Africa and the abuses these people endured would be horrendous. This would lead to a growing international anti-slavery movement, and one of the critical people in that movement was Dr. David Livingston, the famed British missionary and explorer. Livingston was a unique man. While he was an explorer, he was a missionary first, dedicated to bringing Christianity to the natives of Africa. He abhorred slavery and the pain that it inflicted on the people and their culture. Yet he also believed in the rightness of expanding English influence and rule in Africa, as it brought Christianity and civilization to the natives. Dr. Livingston's reports about the abuses inflicted on the natives of Africa, such as massacres of innocent women and children, horrified people everywhere, and his commitment and bravery brought him admirers all over the world. Still, despite the work of men like Livingston, slavery persisted, although it was often called something different, indentured servitude, bonded labor, that sort of thing. So all of this stuff, a growing anti-slavery movement, a desire for raw natural materials, as well as control of the emerging African markets, would give European nations an excuse to start intervening in Africa and ultimately controlling it. Sadly, the very thing that they said that they would stop, slavery and the exploitation of the native peoples continued and often got worse under European rule. We will talk more about these issues throughout our story, but now let us move on and introduce the star of our show, Pierre Savornyan de Braza.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Braza was born Pietro Paolo Savognon de Braza in Castel Gandolfo, just outside of Rome, on January 26, 1852. At this time, the area was controlled by the Papal States. He was the 10th child of Count Ascanio Savognon di Braza, a nobleman from Udine, which is in the northeast corner of Italy, about 50 miles from Venice. His mother was Giacinta Simonetti. Pietro was the 7th son of the family, which according to legend meant the child would be blessed. It was an old and distinguished family, tracing its roots back more than 1,500 years. However, by the mid-1800s, things were changing in Italy and throughout Europe. Reform, even revolution, was in the air. The Braza family had been forced to move to the area around Rome after their ancestral home was occupied by the Austrians. Braza would grow up in a wealthy, liberal, cosmopolitan household. There were few hardships, and the children of Ascanio and Giacinta were well-educated and encouraged to be open-minded. Young Pietro was athletic and loved to be outdoors. He also adored adventure novels and dreamed of seeing the world. He read stories about Italian explorers, including Marco Polo, Christopher Columbus, and Amerigo Vespucci, and dreamed of following in their footsteps. Also, he was fascinated by maps, and the big blank spot marked Africa captivated him. As a student, Braza was indifferent and often bored by his studies, but he did do well in geography and astronomy. He also had a bold streak to him, and I found one story that demonstrates this characteristic of his personality, which will be such an integral part of his makeup. The story says that when Braza was a boy, he was afraid of cemeteries. Instead of accepting that fact and just avoiding them, he confronted the fears in a very unique way. One night, when he was 11 years old, he snuck out of his house. He went to the local cemetery and proceeded to sleep the night in the darkest spot he could find. It was his way to confront and overcome his fears. So as Braza grew into a teenager, he decided that he wanted to join the Navy. And not just any Navy, but the French Navy, which was much more prestigious than the fledgling Italian Navy. Also, the Braza family had ties to France, and Pietro's parents admired the nation, which was seen as a more stable situation compared to what Italy was going through. It was at this time that Braza would be introduced to Louis de Montagnac, an admiral in the French Navy. The admiral would be impressed by young Braza and promised to help him get into the French Naval Academy. So it was here at this time that the Braza family would begin to move back to their ancestral home in Udine, as the region had been reacquired by Italy from Austria. But for young Pietro, the dream of going to the French Naval Academy would instead take him to France. At the encouragement of Admiral Montagnac, Braza would be sent to a Jesuit secondary school in Paris that was famous for preparing the well-born and noble children of France for its military academies. Also, a cousin of Braza, Duchess Fitz-James, lived in Paris and would be able to look after the boy. Thus, Pietro would head to Paris in 1866 at the age of 14. Because Braza was still a citizen of the Papal States, the Pope would have to approve the decision. The move to Paris would be, as you can imagine, a difficult one for Braza. He loved the city, but he missed the warmth of Italy, his loving family, and the more relaxed Italian culture. France, he found, was stiff and formal. And then there was the language barrier. While Braza's French was fine and getting better by the day, he would always have an accent and thus be pegged as the outsider and the foreigner. At his new school, Braza would learn discipline and responsibility, but he continued to feed his love of adventure stories, reading the latest works by Alexandre Dumas and Jules Verne. A few years later, Braza would be admitted into the French Naval Academy. As he was 53rd in his class of 77, it was likely that family connections got him into the academy more than academic achievement. At the Naval Academy, Braza grew into a tall, athletic, handsome young man. He was a strong swimmer and was frequently given positions of responsibility. His reading would progress to include the real-life stories of explorers such as Mungo Park, Richard Burton, David Livingstone, and Henry Morton Stanley. the lure of Africa only grew more powerful. Regarding Dr. David Livingston, Braza would become a great admirer of the man. He respected Livingston's compassionate and humane approach toward exploration and joined the man in his hatred for slavery and the exploitation of the natives of Africa. However, unlike Livingston, Braza was not a particularly religious person. He was described as a young man of high ideals and morals, but he would never be very religious. Braza would graduate from the Naval Academy in 1870. He was the 44th of 62 cadets. He was assigned to a warship as a midshipman second class. Now, if you know your French history, 1870 is kind of a big year. This marked the beginning of the Franco-Prussian War. Well, long story short, the result was a swift and humiliating defeat for France, which would lose the eastern border territory of Alsace-Lorraine, plus have to pay a massive indemnity. A socialist rising in Paris would follow, leading to a short, bloody civil war. Out of it all would emerge the Third French Republic. Now, all of this had lasted less than a year, and thus young Braza never saw any military action. Now, 1870 was a big year for France, but also one for Braza. His birthplace and nominal homeland, the Papal States, after more than 1,000 years as a political entity, was no more, annexed by the Kingdom of Italy. Braza now had a decision to make. He understood that he was now as much a Frenchman as he was an Italian, but he saw his future in France. Thus, he put in a request to become a French citizen. Going forward, he was now Pierre instead of Pietro, and that is how I will refer to him for the rest of the series. So young Pierre Savignon de Braza, after the fiasco that was the Franco-Prussian War, would be assigned to a naval force to quell an insurrection led by the Kabyle tribesmen of Algeria. The Makrani Revolt, named after the leader of the insurrection, was a short, nasty conflict with thousands dying on both sides. The Kabyle people and their allies would be defeated, and hundreds of thousands of acres of land would be seized by the French government and redistributed to others, many of them refugees from Alsace-Lorraine. Here, Braza would have his first encounter with the often harsh tactics employed by the government on the local peoples, including the machine gunning of civilians. Braza's next assignment would be more to his liking. He was assigned to a ship, the Venus, to go on a 2-year mission intercepting slave ships along the coast of Gabon. The main French settlement in the area was the outpost of Libreville, which was founded in 1839. This was the kind of thing that Braza had dreamed of. Gabon is in west-central Africa, and much of our story will take place in that region. I have placed a map of it on our website, explorerspodcast.com. Now, a couple of geographic notes here. There are two major rivers that discharge in the region, the Congo and the Niger. The Niger, which is to the north, is really a big estuary, and it discharges in a huge area that gives it many outlets, most of which are difficult to navigate. The Congo, to the south of Libreville, about 500 miles, is a different story. It is a huge river and had only been recently mapped. However, navigation up the river was limited because a series of rapids less than 100 miles from the ocean. Thus, explorers were interested in other options, one of which was the Ogowe River, about 120 miles south of Libreville. The Ogowe was narrower than the Congo and had not been explored very far upriver. During this tour of duty, Braza would become fascinated by African culture. Unlike many Europeans, he did not dismiss the natives or their customs, and instead tried to learn about them. He even took short trips in a canoe up the Ogowe and Gabon rivers, trading for native daggers and bows and arrows and other trinkets. Part of this was the man's intense curiosity. He was just fascinated by other peoples and their lifestyles. Another part of it was a simple respect for others, no matter what their race. In May of 1874, Braza would meet Antoine Alfred Marsh, a 30-year-old explorer and naturalist who had participated in two expeditions in the region, including spending a year exploring the Ogowe, going more than 200 miles upriver. All of this would inspire Braza, who was determined to lead his own expedition to Africa. Thus, when he returned to France later that year, he wrote out a proposal to undertake a 6-month expedition up the Ogowe River. He felt the Ogowe had the potential to be a major river, perhaps even leading to the African Great Lakes on the other side of the continent. This was the area that included Lake Victoria and Lake Tanganyika. Braza's goal was to open up the region for trade, expand French colonial interests, and counter the efforts being made by other nations to claim the area. In doing this, he acknowledged the dangers, saying in his proposal, quote, "I know that I shall need luck if the aim I seek is to crown my endeavors," end quote. He also stated his burning desire to succeed, and he was willing to die in the endeavor if that is what it took. This was all very Braza-like. His proposal was bold and dangerous, and out of step with many of his peers. And let's not forget, he was just 22 years old. To propose something like this at such a young age was borderline audacious. Now, Braza would face some pushback for all of this. France was not a massive colonial power at the time, and in the wake of the war with Germany and the new democratic government, well, the idea of spending time and money and resources on such a thing didn't sit well in some circles. But fear not, the young man had some important backers in his corner. The first of these was Admiral de Montagnac, who we mentioned earlier in our story. The admiral, who was now the Minister of the Navy, had maintained an interest in Braza over the years and was a powerful ally. Also, there were other interests within the French government, as well as in the scientific and business communities, that welcomed such an endeavor. Some saw it as a chance to restore the glory of France as an international power, and others, of course, saw it as a way to make money. And as other European powers began to poke around Africa, the French government thought that it was prudent to do so as well. No point in letting the Germans or Belgians or whoever get the jump on them. Now, all of this would be thrown up in the air when Braza's application for French citizenship was officially approved in August of 1874. You would think that's a good thing. Ah, but bureaucracy can be an unpredictable monster. You see, Braza had been accepted and graduated from the French Naval Academy as a foreign citizen. Well, as crazy as it seems, that meant his officer's commission was now null and void, as he had not earned the rank as a French citizen. Some speculate this was done as a way to put the upstart young Italian in his place. But no matter what the answer, Braza was now in a bit of limbo, and it didn't help that at the same time he fell and broke his arm. But Braza would use his recovery time to his advantage. In addition to going through channels to get his commission reinstated, he worked to gain support for his proposed expedition to Africa. And in doing so, Braza would demonstrate a skill that would help him not just in France, but in Africa and pretty much everywhere he went. The tall and handsome young man in the sharp naval uniform was likable and charming. He carried himself effortlessly in conversation, whether with diplomats or nobles or scientists. He could hobnob over drinks at a swanky chateau with other nobles or have coffee and cigarettes at a dingy cafe while talking politics or scientific theory with students and intellectuals. Braza even worked his way into the circle of explorers who made Paris their home or were passing through the city. This ability to charm others, to make friends, it was a skill many attribute to his Italian background. He had grown up in a warm and open family, and he had been forced to adapt to a new culture and language as a teenager. All of this made him learn to listen, adapt, and engage with people. In many ways, it was this willingness and ability to listen that made him connect with others so well. So Braza would endure months of frustration regarding his officer's commission, but by January of 1875, things would get ironed out. He would take a series of exams, and after passing them, be reinstated as an officer in the French Navy with the rank of ensign. Thus, with all that done, Braza would ultimately get approval for his expedition, but he would need to get financing. The French government could offer some money, but not enough to cover all the costs. And with that, he went about organizing his expedition to Africa. Braza would raise money from a variety of sources, including the French government, the Paris Geographical Society, and his own family, which was very wealthy. And then, with money lined up, it was time to get his team together. The expedition would consist of himself, a doctor, a quartermaster, and a naturalist. He would recruit these positions in France. In addition, once in Africa, he would add a dozen Senegalese marines as well as native guides. Braza's officers would be as follows. Antoine Alfred Marsh, the man Braga had met the previous year, would be hired as the naturalist. He was the only man in the expedition with any real exploration experience. Noel Ballet, a just-graduated 28-year-old medical student from the University of Paris, would be the doctor. He had done his thesis on tropical diseases, and Braza had been impressed by the young man's enthusiasm. The quartermaster would be Victor Hammond, who Braza had served with on his mission to Gabon. Braza knew he was a trustworthy, dependable man who could take command if the situation called for it. Braza was careful about those that he took on his expedition. He selected capable and trustworthy men and rarely made impulsive decisions about such things. Even when he brought on the native soldiers and guides, he would be very careful and selective. As for provisioning the expedition, Braza would have the things you would imagine: scientific instruments, medicine, cooking gear, and so forth and so on. Unlike many African expeditions, the number of weapons was limited. But Braza also ordered several tons of cloth and tools, items that he knew he could trade to the African people. He also brought fireworks, hoping they would impress the natives. One thing not on his list of provisions was alcohol. He had decided not to include booze, but he would later relent when the native peoples showed a strong desire for gin and brandy. Now, all of this sounds pretty good, but let's be honest, people were skeptical of Braza. These kinds of expeditions were fraught with dangers, and many assumed that he would spend a few months poking around Africa and come running back once illness took hold of the party or natives threatened him and his men. No matter, the expedition was formally announced on July 29, 1875. The French government paid for their part of the affair with 10,000 francs taken from the Gabon colony. So, by the time Braza and his men departed in August of 1875, he had made a bit of a name for himself in Paris. He had wooed just about everyone with his thoughtful and confident manner, and while Braza's departure was not a big deal at the time, many had taken note of the man and were curious to see how he would do with his first command. The four explorers would depart from Bordeaux by ship on August 20, 1875. Braza was all of 23 years old and was leading an expedition of exploration into the unknowns of Africa. This was the kind of thing he had dreamed about since he was a young boy. 2 weeks later, Braza would reach Senegal, where a dozen Senegalese Marines were brought into the party. They were armed with the latest lightweight bolt-action rifles. These native soldiers were Muslims, but pledged to France. Now, one thing that they didn't like about their new job was that they had to wear shoes, and they did so only reluctantly. Braza was told that there was an African proverb that said, quote, "A person who wears shoes has something to hide and cannot be trusted," end quote. I mention this because, in time, Braza will stop wearing footwear, and the local people will love him for it. Now, from the moment he arrived in Africa, Braza would be frustrated by the bureaucracy, the infighting, and the poor communication that surrounded virtually everything that he did. Rivalries and grudges were laid bare on the frontier, and Braza saw it undermining not just him, but all that was being done in the region. This would be an issue throughout Braza's life. For a few weeks, Braza would train his new Marines for the mission ahead, before departing by ship for Gabon in late September. They would arrive in Libreville, which is today the capital of Gabon, a month later. It didn't take long for Braza's expedition to run into some issues. The first was the cost of supplies and goods. They were sky-high due to the fact that another explorer, an Austrian named Oscar Lenz, had come through Libreville the previous year and bought up all the stuff at high prices. The second issue was illness. Already, two of Braza's Marines were sick and would have to be sent home. In response, Braza would do the best that he could when buying provisions, even tapping into his own personal funds. And instead of hiring two local interpreters, he hired four to help make up for the Marines he had had to send home. So, here in Libreville, Braza would prepare to depart on his expedition. He had his men ready, as well as supplies. There were 156 crates weighing an astounding 8 tons. The plan was to haul everything down the coast of Africa by steamer and up the Ogowe River. From there, it was about 100 miles to the outpost town of Lambarini. In Lambarini, Braza would then have to negotiate with the local chiefs to move upriver. But that, I'm afraid, is for next time. For now, we will leave Braza and his men, plus 8 tons of provisions and goods, on a steamer getting ready to depart Libreville as the young man begins his first expedition of exploration into the unknowns of Central Africa. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Join us next time as Braza goes from an inexperienced naval officer to the man who would be dubbed the White Shaman and the father of slaves by the local people. It is a great story, and I hope you will come along for the ride. Thank you for listening. I will see you next time.
The French Revolution set Europe ablaze. It was an age of enlightenment and progress, but also of tyranny and oppression. It was an age of glory and an age of tragedy. One man stood above it all. This was the Age of Napoleon. I'm Everett Rummage, host of the Age of Napoleon podcast. Join me as I examine the life and times of one of the most fascinating and enigmatic characters in modern history. Look for the Age of Napoleon wherever you find your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Mike Troy, host of the American Revolution podcast on the Airwave Media Network. This podcast is the origin story of the United States, how we went from colonies ruled by a king to the democratic republic that we have today. The American Revolution podcast tells the story of the revolution from beginning to end. Please subscribe for free. We're available on all major podcast platforms. I hope you will join me today on the American Revolution podcast.